Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello, New York Mets fans. This is Rich Sparago, known as CT Mets Fan on Twitter. And you are listening to the Metsian Podcast. And it's been a while since you've been on the air. It's been since February 16th. So there's a lot to talk about. You think about it. On February 16th, Mets preseason exhibition games had not yet started. And now the schedule is officially over. The exhibition schedule ended this afternoon. So we have a lot to talk about. Let me bring my co-host on here for tonight, the gentleman we call the Grand Poobah of podcasting operations for the Metsian Podcast. So tonight we have Mr. Sam Maxwell. And Sam, I wouldn't be consistent if I didn't ask you not only how are you, but where are you?
I am currently in Manhattan. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you, Rich. Thank you for starting us off. And thanks for all of you who are joining us tonight. I can't wait to talk more about this Metsian baseball team of ours.
Same, Sam, definitely the same. And in order to help us do that, we have a guest tonight, a gentleman who's been with us many times on the Metsian Podcast, always has very strong insights, and and he's a very funny guy too as well. He mixes, you know, serious Mets talking with some good humor. He's known as Metstradamus on Twitter, and he's Mr. John Coppinger. So, John, good evening, and how are you tonight? And thank you for joining us.
Oh, please, it's my pleasure. Always a pleasure to join you guys on on what has turned out to be a beautiful Sunday night here in New York City.
It really is. I mean, if you were out at all today in the tri-state area, you felt baseball. I mean, it was high 50s and the brilliant sky, a high blue sky. And the start of the season is less than four full days away. So let's jump right in here. When we last spoke, we had John on, and one of the topics we touched on was the WBC. Is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? And we'll get to that in a minute, but we all know what happened. If you're listening to this podcast, you know that Edwin Diaz is lost for the season due to a freak injury at the WBC. So I have a two-part question for you, Sam and John, and here we go. So the first thing is, did what happened to Diaz affect your perception of the WBC? And we could throw Altuve in there too. Jose Altuve got hit in the thumb, surgery. We don't know when he's coming back out indefinitely. So did these injuries to some very, very prolific stars impact your perception of the WBC or not? And how did you feel about the Diaz injury when it happened? We'll get to filling in the saves later, but so that's a two-part question. Did the freak injuries, especially Diaz, did that change your perception of the WBC? And secondly, what did you think about Diaz when it first happened? So, Sam, let's start with you.
My big thing is specifically the celebration aspect of when the injury happened. Now, we have seen this happen plenty of times during celebrations. Maybe not plenty of times, but the first thing that pops into my head, the walk-off home run, slam down on the plate, and for a while after that leg was broken, I forget exactly whose leg it was, there was a walk-off home run and a leg was broken as that batter was coming down on home plate. And for a little while, like players understood they needed to kind of bring it back a little bit during celebrations. And there were some creative celebrations that came out of that moment. And I think you did see immediately after the WBC that celebrations changed a little bit. I think that, I get that it's the Dominican Republic, and I get that it's your biggest rival, but it's still you're going into, you know, to make a March Madness comparison, you're going into the Elite Eight after that victory. But this is also where the nuanced conversation comes and where the WBC is another beast that we can't even consider bigger than the World Series, bigger than the Caribbean Series, you could even say. The fact, you know, I know how big the Caribbean Series gets, and I know how crazy it all gets at the Caribbean Series, but you'd still think to yourself, I mean, maybe this is kind of a window for the United States fan into the Caribbean Series in some fashion, but again, I go back to it being the quarterfinals. And I thought that after that, when the U.S., I believe, either got into the championship or at least got to, I think it was to go to the Final Four against Cuba, they were extremely excited, but they still gave themselves those high fives, the normal, you know, line high fives that we see after every victory. My biggest issue in the moment, Rich, was not about the fact that they were at the WBC. It was the fact that it happened during the celebration. That was my biggest issue with the moment. Any issue that maybe arose short-term in the moment about the WBC and the fact that this wouldn't happen if this tournament didn't exist kind of went by the wayside the more I watched the tournament. I've always been really into the WBC. I've really enjoyed the moments, which include our Captain America getting his nickname because of that, because of the WBC. And I think this year is a crazy intersection of nuance regarding the WBC, because it was some of the best baseball we've ever watched. It was some of the most exciting little intricate moments, you know, and I forget his full name, but Randy with the Mexican team who defected from Cuba. There are all these little stories that expose baseball to the rest of the world even more than it currently is. And with the way the numbers were not only around the world when it came to viewership, but also in America, I don't think you can look at this thing, as many people sometimes do, regarding their own players for the individual city team or the United States alone. But again, the United States alone, those numbers for these baseball games were remarkable, especially considering the current, you know, just the current environment when it comes to ratings. I think we're talking 3 to 5 million per game in America. And with the way that attention spans are spread out compared and contrasting with, you know, the highs of the World Series numbers, when there were only 13 channels to tune in, stuff of that nature. I was rather impressed when I saw what the numbers were like in the United States alone at the end of the WBC. So I don't understand how you could view this, regardless of what your team affiliation is, and view this as bad for the game. And I don't, like, and this is where it seems rather dumb, even as an affiliated fan. Like, isn't the entire point still, when it comes down to it, the only reason you care about the Mets, the only reason you care about them is because they play baseball. So shouldn't your main priority be the exposure of baseball? Because if the exposure of baseball isn't there, then the Mets team that you root for doesn't exist. So it's kind of a what comes first, the chicken or the egg thing in many fashions with some of these heightened reactions that occur when it comes to the WBC. The bottom line, as far as I'm concerned, is that this is good for baseball. So regardless of whether Edwin Diaz is now out of there, and again, I gave my piece as to why I think that is, and you know how much I think they need to take precautions during celebration to not have that happen. The WBC is clearly good for baseball, and every year it seems to get better and better for baseball. The Czech Republic, Great Britain, Italy, these are three countries that you never really consider having anything to do with baseball, and both maybe Great Britain just for the fact that they were there unto themselves, Czech Republic more so and Italy more so, still made headlines in this tournament. And the fact that that's the case, that there's every year there seems to be a surprise team within the capacity of the teams that are in here, I think, like, the WBC keeps getting better and better regardless of whether, ironically, with a five-year, $100 million deal at the foreground of it, Edwin Diaz is no longer our closer for the year.
All right. So basically you think WBC is good for baseball and also – you know, the Diaz injury doesn't really, I'm going to assume, doesn't really impact your perception. It was a freak injury during a celebration, right? That's basically where you are?
That's basically where I am. In the moment, it really, really pissed me off and grinded my gears. In the moment, I just was not a happy camper, but I wasn't about to bang the drum against the WBC coming out of that.
No, thank you for that, Sam. And John, I'm going to go to you next. But before I do, there are a couple of things on about the WBC, and Sam kind of unearthed them, that I'd like to say before I go to you. And that would be around the popularity and is it good for baseball and all those things. And okay, so in the U.S., viewership for the championship game was right around 5 million. I Googled it, and one report said 5.2, one report said 4.8 million people watched the championship game, the U.S. and Japan. That's up 60% from the last championship game, U.S. versus Puerto Rico in 2017. So that's great. Now you can look at a 60% jump and say that's really good. You could also say that this is the USA playing Japan for the pinnacle prize of the WBC, and let's split the baby down the middle and say it was 5 million viewers. The first round of the NCAA basketball tournament, which, you know, is typically the 16s don't usually beat the ones, you know, it's happened twice and it happened once this year, right? But anyway, that drew 9.4 million, almost double the WBC. So you could look at the number and say it's 5 million, it's up 60%, and that's one perspective. You could also say baseball is our national pastime or not, depending upon your perspective on football. And this was a championship game and 5.2 million people watched it versus 9.3 with NCAA basketball. It was trounced by NCAA basketball. Let's be honest. So I don't know how you look at it. You can look at it both ways. Both are true, right? Relatively speaking against previous years, it went up a lot. Raw number, it's really not good. Frankly, it's not good. And I think it's good for baseball. I really do. I think it should be played. I really do. I'm not sure I have a better answer than spring training, so we won't really get into that here. But one thing I will say is that this concept that, to me, that the WBC is whipping the planet into a baseball frenzy is an extremely false narrative. It's not happening. It's not happening here. Not happening in the U.S. And I think what is happening, I heard someone else say this, you take countries that are into baseball, like Puerto Rico and Dominican Republic and Korea and Japan, and yeah, people are watching and people are into it where baseball is already popular. I don't see any professional baseball leagues in the Czech Republic, Great Britain. I don't see these like this worldwide baseball frenzy happening. But John, please take it from there. I'm just throwing out things to consider.
Well, there's some great points that you brought up. And I think what we all have to remember is that the World Baseball Classic is a relative baby in terms of international competitions. It's been compared a lot recently to the World Cup. the World Cup has been around forever as an international competition. You know, even hockey has had the World Cup of hockey, and then before that you had the Canada Series, the Canada Cup, where 1972 was and 1987 were crazy years that really brought attention to the international portion of that sport. Because you don't have a lot of these professional sports that are able to play in the Olympics outside of basketball, and basketball's done it forever. So basketball has had their international competition because they've had the Olympics. So for the World Baseball Classic, you know, and I come from a place where when it first happened in 2006, I thought, I don't know about this. You know, this is Bud Selig's desperate attempt to cement his legacy, you know, and everybody was kind of like, well, what's going on here? And by 2009, with all the upsets happened, the Netherlands upset the Dominican Republic, I believe, in 09, that's when it hooked me. And it's like, okay, you know what? This could work. This seems to be gaining traction, and it's a lot of fun. And it's gotten more fun every time. And this is the first generation of players that I think has grown up with the WBC. So when you hear them talk about it, you hear how much it means to them. Maybe it didn't mean as much to the players that were playing in 2006. They may look back on it now and say, hey, that was a lot of fun. I wish I had appreciated it more. But this group now, I think, that played in this past WBC, I think really appreciated it. And I think for fans, you know, for me, when it happened, my one thing about how it affected my view of the WBC was that I was not really into watching the United States game that night, because they played afterwards, and I was like, I'm not really into this. I don't remember if that was the game they lost against Mexico or the game they won against Great Britain or Canada. That might have been the Canada game, but I wasn't into it because I was so bummed about DS. But you know, thinking about it, that celebration wasn't even a bad celebration. I don't think Diaz was kind of was hopping around with the rest of them. And even the players that were hopping around were doing so, you know, like little bunny rabbits. They weren't like doing cartwheels or anything. It was a freak thing that could have happened anywhere. You know, and I'm sure Alexis feels bad because I believe it was his brother that jumped on him that kind of moved that injury along. But listen, Martin Gramatica blew out his ACL celebrating an extra point like it was a game-winning field goal in the Super Bowl. Nobody wanted to ban field goals. Gary Blevins hurt his wrist stepping off a curb in New York City. Nobody wanted to ban curbs after that. So, and then you saw what happened to Rhys Huskins on a truly meaningless game. The WBC, when you look at the WBC and juxtapose it against spring training, and everybody wants to say, well, the WBC is useless. No, spring training is actually useless. You get hurt in spring training, that really should grind your gears to get hurt in the latter stages of spring training, a six-week exercise in exercise, you know? So as I moved along from that pretty quickly and said, listen, the WBC is what it is. It was such a freak injury. It wasn't like Diaz overextended to throw a 103-mile-per-hour pitch against Puerto Rico. It wasn't as if he did cartwheels off the mound afterwards. Then I might feel a little differently after that, but none of that happened. Everybody was responsible. It was a freak injury that could have very well happened to the Mets when they were practicing their World Series celebration at the end of 2021 spring training. So, no, it bummed me out, but it doesn't affect my view of the WBC, because you can't scream and yell about wanting the game to grow and then call the WBC useless, because the WBC has done more to grow the game, I think, than the powers that be in Major League Baseball have done in the past 20 years, and I'll stand by that.
Very fair. Nicely said. All right, so now, and I agree, I think saying ban the WBC because of Diaz is ridiculous, because that could have happened. Like you said, he could have reached up to, or, you know, or just jumped up to touch the ceiling in his own house and that had that happen. So it's a freak thing. That's no reason to say end something. I totally agree with that. All right, moving on, because we're a little tight on time. So we talked about Diaz, and John, I'm going to go to you first on this one, two-part question. Diaz is gone. He may triumphantly return in the middle of September. He certainly thinks he has a shot to do that 6 months out. We'll see. but let's just assume he's gone for the year. The Mets have to save ball games. You know, let's get back to that. So do you think that the Mets, with Adam Ottavino, who has 37 career saves, David Robertson, who can save games, but he's 39 years old, and, you know, Brooks Raley and Tommy Hunter and the other guys in the bullpen, do you think the Mets have the internal options and can be just fine? Or do you think the Mets should go outside the organization? So that's question one, and Sam, that'll be the same question to you. And, John, the second thing is I didn't really give you a chance to do your shameless plug, so if maybe before you answer that question, you could just tell us where we could find your work as Metrodominus. I know you do a podcast. You could just share that as well.
Yeah, sure. Well, the website is metrodominusblog.com. You can always find me there, and we're going to ramp that up again with the season starting for sure. And then, as I said in the last show, I'm also part of a project called kinerscorner.com. We've acquired the rights to that name, and we've got a lot of we got a lot of people who are part of that group, and we've got some former players that are taking part in it. We've got a blog, we've got videos, so we're doing some all-encompassing things there. And also, shameless plug on Tuesday night, we're going to be online online via Zoom, and we're going to have a National League East preview on Tuesday. So if you want to join the Zoom, it'll be on my Twitter account, which is at Metrodominus. So we're looking forward to you guys joining us there on Tuesday night at 8 o'clock. So that is my shameless plug. Thank you very much for letting me get there. I will also say, to answer your question, sure, I think they can piece some things together with Robertson and Ottavino and perhaps Raley in the right situation. I would also not forget about Tylor McGill, even though he didn't really impress in his time as a reliever last year. I think that was a strange situation. I think the only thing that would keep Tylor McGill from perhaps having a shot at closing games is that they'll need him to start some games for Jose Quintana. So I would say McGill is another option also. But I would say, listen, if Peterson is going to be their fifth starter and they just acquired Dylan Bundy, maybe they can have some flexibility with McGill, whether they want to have him be a starter, a spot starter, a fifth starter, or have him close some games or have him contribute in the bullpen with all the rest of the guys moving up to that closer spot like Ottavino and David Robertson. So the good thing is that the Mets have options. The bad thing is that none of them are Edwin Diaz, but hey, that's, you know, c'est la vie. You got to go with what you got, and I think the Mets did pretty well to gain some to have some depth behind Diaz. Is it enough depth? That I'm not so sure about, but I think in the back end I think they'll be fine.
Great. Sam, are you in-house options, or do you think they have to look outside? Where are you with the bullpen?
Well, I'm still on Dylan Bundy. I didn't even know that they signed him, but this looks like, not John Lackey, but what's his name? Jesus Christ, John Laffey or something. I forget.
Oh, Aaron Laffey.
But just one of those, Aaron Laffey, thank you. That's just what this has written all over it. So, you know, I hope he can provide the Mets with something. But, you know, a 4.89 career ERA, 4.74 career ERA, 22.489. I'm not really looking towards Dylan Bundy to be Cy Young reincarnated. Just in terms of that, I just want to also say David Peterson, I think he's ready to break out, and I really am looking forward to what his season looks like. I know we're talking about relievers, but you mentioned Peterson. I just had to throw that out there, and hopefully that can be used as a segue to starting pitchers. I think Tylor McGill, I think he's a bulldog and that he will figure out a way to be competitive at the major leagues wherever he gets a chance to. So I'm not really worried based off of his recent relieving duties. I think that could possibly be an option. And I will also say this, Rich, a lot of people were just like, oh, man, the Diaz, you guys are really, you know, in a pickle because of that. And I'm like, yeah, how'd the Mets do in the World Series last year? And it's like, well, they weren't in the World Series. Exactly. Even make – they didn't make it past the wild card round. So everybody cool down. Look at the way the playoffs can go. And by no stretch of the imagination can this mean that the Mets are ruined for the season. I just think that's such a stretch one way or another. And, again, I point towards the way people have pieced together saves in the recent past regarding playoff teams. So it wasn't like the Mets dominated the field just because Edwin Diaz dominated the league last year.
Okay. Fair points. Definitely fair points. My only concern, like I said, is that Robertson, can you go to him every day? Maybe you can. You know, at 39, I'm a little bit concerned. Ottavino, I was surprised to see he only has 37 career saves. You know, and he's, I think he's 36 years old, 37 years old. So what I'm saying is he's just not an experienced closer. You could do it by committee. We'll see where it goes. Personally, I think they have to look outside the organization. I think all the guys they have are outstanding complementary pieces. I would love to see somebody come in. Yes, I'm one of those people who would love to see a trade for Diaz's brother, for Alexis Diaz. I know that that's a long shot. I'm sure the Reds would absolutely want to hose the Mets, and it might not be the right time to do it. But we'll see. You know, we'll see what they do, and it certainly looks like a deal isn't coming before Thursday. So they're going to go with in-house options, and it may work out just fine. So, okay, with that said, let's talk a bit more about roster construction. We could start with pitching. You know, Sam will go right back to you on this. If you have any additional comments, we're pivoting to John. It certainly seems as though David Peterson, 12 innings pitched during the spring, four hits, no runs allowed over 12 innings. That's pretty damn good. It certainly seems as though he should be the fifth starter, who's actually going to be the second starter, from what I understand. Technically the fifth, but he'll get the second game of the season in Miami. So it certainly seems though Robertson, although with a fairly small body of work this spring, has earned that role, and McGill will be sort of like a swingman. So, Sam, where are you with pitching? Obviously, we know that the two guys up top, we know about Senga, we know about Carrasco, but where are you with how they're filling out the rotation?
Senga is obviously the most intriguing part of all of this, I have to say. You know, regardless of any anxiety with Verlander and Scherzer because of their age, I don't think any of us are thinking that they can't handle their own. It's just obviously a question of injury, really. Maybe you could also say fatigue, but I think that's a conversation for later on in the season. When the way it's rounding out, obviously, you know, we wish nothing but the best to Quintana. I don't think we've been on air since all that occurred, and thank God that the tumor ended up being benign. Hopefully everything goes smoothly and he's able to recover in the best way possible. I was always really looking forward to Quintana. And so not only am I looking forward to his athletic prowess, but I wish him all the health in the world when it comes to off the field, non-sports related, matter. Going to Peterson, I think his time has come, and I think he is poised to take the next step somehow, some way. And it's good that from a psychological perspective, nothing has ever been guaranteed. So he has had to impress every single time. I am not looking at these numbers regarding spring. I am thinking of the way he's handled himself in his major league opportunities over the last few years, and specifically the way he handled himself at certain points in 2022. So, I think he's just poised to really have a breakout year, so we'll see how that goes one way or another. I think I'm really curious about Senga. I hope that Quintana can heal himself as fast as possible and make sure that his health is okay. And I really think Peterson is just ripe for a breakout role this year.
I agree. I really think his time has come. John, where are you with on the pitching side of the equation, on the starting pitching side of the equation, how the Mets are putting things together, and would you agree with what they're doing? And if not, what would be your suggestion for something to do differently?
I would agree with most everything that Sam has said, including well wishes for Quintana. I like Peterson in the rotation because I like having a lefty in the rotation. I'm not really a fan of having five righties. I like changing the look. I'm actually intrigued about the fact that Peterson is going to be the second guy. So then now you split up Scherzer and Verlander, the hard-throwing righties, with David Peterson. Now, that might kind of flip things around for these batters a little bit. So I like it for that reason. McGill would be intriguing as a starter just because of his success as a starter last year. You know, we saw him, and I heard whispers of, like, an early career Matt Harvey when they were looking at McGill. So I wouldn't be against McGill taking that spot. But, again, I like having lefties in the rotation. So if you can have one in Peterson, if Peterson can live up to those small sample size numbers that he has, then I think he would be a phenomenal addition to the rotation. Because, like I said, he splits up the hard throwing righties. I think that'll catch some teams off guard, and it could work. Who knows? But I like it.
Good. Yeah, I do too. I think we're all aligned on that one. All right. Mets made some other roster decisions either yesterday or today, a combination of both. And so I'll lay them out, and then I'll ask you guys to comment on them. So, John, I'll go to you first on this one. So the big three, right, Francisco Alvarez, Brett Beatty, and Mark Vientos, none of the three will initially start the season on the roster. Instead, we will have Vogelbach. We will have Ruff or LeCastro. They were talking about that during the game today, that the Mets have a decision to make there. Likely it'll be Ruff, but we'll see. So we'll have Ruff and Vogelbach, and we'll have Escobar instead of Vientos, Alvarez, and Beatty. So just a 1 minute of background on that before, John, before you take it. Alvarez did not hit at all during the spring. Okay, you know, the guy had very little time in AAA. And so last year the Mets totally forced him up in September. I don't know what they were thinking, but they forced him up, and he was well overmatched. I have no problem with him starting the season in AAA, especially catcher. He has to hone his craft. He has a very, very strong arm. He just has to hone, you know, buff it up a little bit. He's 21 years old. Give him the time. Beatty, I think he hit about 290, if I recall, two home runs in spring training. His defense was generally good, a little spotty, generally good. And for Vientos, he hit about the same, about 290. With a couple of home runs, like maybe three or four home runs. I was at a game in PSL when he hit an absolute bullet up the gap. It was the second game of the season when Scherzer pitched on a Sunday. And that exit velocity had to be 115. I mean, he crushed that ball. So we saw some good things from Vientos. But again, the word we heard from Billy Eppler, and I'll leave it here before I go to you, John, is that those guys, basically all of them, I think he said it specifically about Beatty and Vientos, they had some markers to hit in the minor leagues that, you know, they still had some work to do. And I'll say again, I have no problem with that because these guys, not everybody goes from AA, makes a jump. And I think as Mets fans, we see some of those Braves prospects like Harris who hit the ground running. And it's like, well, why can't we have that? Force our guys up there. That's not really the answer. You know, forcing guys onto the major league roster when they're not ready is really kind of imprudent, and I kind of like the direction the Mets are taking. I would give a very, very short leash to Escobar, Ruff, and Vogelbach, but letting these guys start in AAA, I have no problem with that. John, take it from here, please.
Rich, Sam, I'm sure you guys remember a young man by the name of Lastings Millage. I'm also sure you remember a young man by the name of Fernando Fernando Martinez, excuse me. Now, each situation is different. One is not like the other. I'm sure there were things in Martinez's and Millage's upbringing, their play in the minor leagues, that are unique to them and not to everybody else. But they were both brought up in the Omar Minaya regime. I know at least Millage was. And Minaya's policy about minor leaguers was always, let's bring them to the next level as soon as we can and challenge them. It didn't work. That thinking did not work with our two best hitting prospects of that time, Millage and Martinez. So for that reason alone, I'm very happy that they're taking a cautious approach with all three of these guys. And listen, Alvarez, I think you're absolutely right. I think he needs to hone his defense. And I think the reason he needs to work on his defense is because it's going to be such a different ballgame for catchers now with the pitch clock. It's going to be incumbent on them. If pitchers can't throw over more than twice in an at-bat, then it's going to be on the catcher to make more throws to first base to pick guys off, more throws to second base to throw guys out ceiling, especially the former part, the throws to first to pick them off, to pick those runners off. That's going to be on the catcher. And that's something that Alvarez and even the guys in the majors like Nito are going to have to get used to. Tomas Nito is a more important player on this roster than anybody realizes, just for that reason. And he's very good defensively, and he can handle it. But there's a whole other dynamic that catchers have to learn that. And Alvarez, being the bonus baby, he has to learn that, and you don't want to learn on the job. You want to learn in AAA. And Vientos, when he was up in the majors, he struck out a ton. So I'm not surprised at all that Vientos is down. Beatty may be the one guy who you could say, hey, he had some success up here. Maybe he's the guy you bring up instead of Rock. But then the question becomes, hey, where are you going to get Beatty regular at-bats? I think if the Mets don't feel they can get him regular at-bats, then let him get those regular at-bats in AAA for a month. Because if Darren Ruff doesn't work out, then that's going to be the easiest and quickest cut on the roster, whether it's 2 weeks, 3 weeks, or 4 weeks in. And if Ruff works out, great. You know, maybe the change of scenery, maybe the trade didn't do Ruff well, and maybe that's why he forgot how to play baseball when he got to the Mets. I don't mind that they're giving him another shot to right his wrong. But if he can't do it, that's going to be a quick hook, and I think that's when Beatty comes up. But until then, you get all these guys regular at-bats in the minors. And don't do what Omar Minaya did and challenge guys by rushing them up, because we saw how that worked out. I think they're playing it right for the first time.
The only time that ever worked out was Pete Alonso, when you really think about it.
Right. But you knew that Alonso, that he had the makeup to handle it. He was a special case. Again, everybody's different. And they learned quick of how different Alonso was. So, yeah, that absolutely worked out. But I wouldn't do that as a general rule.
Right. No, and I didn't mean it in terms of contradicting you. I meant it as,
of course,
a perfect example. And, like, you know, sometimes we forget that happened, you know. I'll also throw out that, I mean, looking at the numbers, they weren't astronomical rich, but I'm wondering how many people were also talking about Ronnie Mauricio with how well he handled himself. It's so crazy to think that he's only 21 years old. I'm pretty sure Ronnie Mauricio was included in the R.A. Dickey deal. Maybe I'm crazy to think that's the case, but I'm pretty sure that, like, Ronnie Mauricio is the last vestige of that deal, which is now 10 years old. That wouldn't even make any sense, considering that the deal's 10 years old and he's 21 years old. Was he included in that?
No, there was another Fauci deal there. No, there's another outfielder in there, but not Mauricio. He wasn't in the Dickey deal, no.
Okay, but I think, yeah. So maybe, yeah, okay.
I think
so,
Mauricio
was an
international signing around like 2015 or so, 2016.
So we've heard about him for a long time now. And anyway, like, I think that everything that you guys have talked about in terms from the Ruff, the Darren Ruff perspective, here's where I will try to challenge either our listeners or just Twitter users themselves. Like, you gotta, like, as much as we say, like, let's try to take the emotion out of the decision while we emotionally bang the drum via Twitter, you gotta put yourself, like, if you're, you know, I'm not saying that Billy Epler decides things emotionally, but all you have to do, if you want to even, like, think about it practically, you still have to put yourself in that person's shoes. Like, Darren Ruff, yes, all right, so we weren't able to get that going for 2 months. Do I think that Darren Ruff should have been immediately designated? Yes. Do I think that he shouldn't necessarily be on this roster? No, I don't think he should be on this roster necessarily. However, I still understand the dilemma. I understand I understand it both from Ruff's perspective and Billy Epler's perspective, how you're going to try. You have an opportunity to try one more time. And there wasn't even really, like, that much of an opportunity the last time. So I think that there's going to be a leash, there's going to be legroom, and it's not necessarily my decision, but I'm also not within the job. I don't have the experience doing what Billy Epler does, and I also am not in Darren Ruff's shoes. So let it fly. I
And if I can add to that too, you know, if you start with Ruff and he doesn't work out, you can cut him quick, and you got Beatty ready, waiting in the wings. If you cut Ruff now and you go to Beatty, and he doesn't work out for whatever reason, then what's your plan? That, I think, is what they're thinking about also, that this is a more natural progression in terms of having a plan A, plan B, and plan C, instead of going right to plan C and then not having that work out, and then you say, oh, well, no, now what? You know, so that's all I'll add to that.
So, you know, the Mets, it looks like they want to go with the veterans. And I, on the one hand, you get that, right? Because this team is built to win now. On the other, I think we all agree. I think it's okay to go with the veterans for now, but I'll tell you what, you give them a short lease. And thanks, Sam, for mentioning Mauricio, because he had a hell of a spring. And that kid can play short. He can play third. He's got power from both sides of the plate. I would hate to see them give up on him. And isn't it interesting that – and I saw that the Mets farm system was rated fifth, and I'm not sure it's quite that good. I think that was one rating. But isn't it interesting that the Mets farm system that was barren of talent, just nothing, now the position players are pretty good. You know, you've got Beatty, you've got Vientos, you've got Alvarez, you've got Mauricio – Cedrola, the outfielder, the Alexi Ramirez. I mean, these guys are real, really good prospects. The Mets don't have a lot of pitching prospects, which is kind of the inverse for the organization traditionally, but they have a lot of position player talent in the minor leagues. And if they have to trade a guy or make a little package to get a closer, if that's the way things pan out, they certainly have the capital to do it. They don't have it on the starting pitching side, but they do have the capital to do it with young position players, and that's a pretty good situation to be in. All right, so we've talked about the roster, and, you know, John, I know we're kind of on borrowed time with you at this point. We'll keep borrowing, so I'll have you go first here. But
yes, keep borrowing. I got a little more time than I have a little bit more time than I thought, so.
Excellent. All right, so let's just ask the very direct question. The question has to be asked is, The season starts on Thursday. Sitting here right now with the Mets roster as it is, you know, potential moves in the future, we can't predict those at this point. Sitting here right now, what are your thoughts? I mean, are the Mets a playoff team, or can they make a deep, and what do you need to do?
I think they're a playoff team. I don't think they're necessarily going to win the division, but I think they're a playoff team. I think the Mets at this moment, and I would have said this if Diaz was healthy also, I think at this moment the Mets' thought is, and I say this with absolutely no inside knowledge of this, but I think what the Mets want to do, their prime thought is to get this team to October healthy. And I think the way they might do that is to get Max Scherzer and Justin Verlander some extra rest period. Max was out a couple times with injury last season, and one was a two-month stint. So I think they're going to be really cautious. And if that means that every once in a while, every so often, they put a sixth pitcher in the rotation for a turn or two, I think they're going to do that because I think they're going to play the long game. I do think it might cost them some games in the regular season, and I don't think people will be happy with that. But I think I have a sneaking suspicion that that's what the Mets are going to do. They're going to keep these guys healthy as long as they can. I think they're going to use guys like Peterson very often, McGill often enough, and maybe even if you throw in a Dylan Bundy or as you say, Casey Fossum, part two, every so often. I mean, look, you know, Dylan Bundy is what he is. He's a guy, he's a career strikeouts of 8.4 per night. He's not that good. He's a high 4 ERA for his career. But I think the Mets are bringing him in. I don't think this is one of those dreaded low-risk, high-reward signings. I don't think they're expecting any sort of reward other than, hey, throw a six innings every now and again. So I think that's what the Mets are going to do, and I think it's going to get them to the playoffs, if not necessarily the division. Because I, as it stands right now, and I hate to say this, I think the Phillies are going to win the division. I think they've got starting pitching that's in their prime with a couple of young ones coming up that might make an impact this year. And most importantly, that defensively up the middle, finally, with this group that they have, they could play some defense with Trey Turner, which is an excellent signing for them, and Brandon Marsh, who they traded for last year. They complement, and they got some good bullpen pieces too. They complement the rest of the players, the power hitters on that roster. They're no longer, I used to call them a jelly sandwich, because they had nothing to hold it together. They had, you know, the bread was Nolan Wheeler, and all these power hitters were the jelly, but they didn't have the peanut butter, which was good defense up the middle, defense that won't lose you games. Instead, they had Odubel Herrera in center field. Now they've got a guy that can play center field competently. Now they've got a shortstop that plays good defense and is going to be a pain in the butt in that lineup for years to come. You saw it in the WBC how good Trey Turner is. So I think they're going to win the division.
Right.
Now, does that necessarily mean they're going to win the World Series? No, because if the Mets get in, I think they're going to give the Phillies a run in the playoffs. So you never know. But as it stands right now in the division, I think the Mets are going to get there. But I don't necessarily think they're going to win the division.
And how deep in the playoffs are they going to run, John?
I think if their plan comes to fruition, if they get those pitchers healthy, if Senga is the real deal, which I think he will be, and if they could piece together that bullpen going forward, then yeah, I think they could make a pretty deep run, especially if by August or September they got one or two of those young guys coming up making contributions. I think if all of that happens, I think they have a real shot to go far in the playoffs.
Awesome, Sam. How are the Mets
mm-hmm.
going to do? And if they're not, if this team isn't constructed to go over the finish line, what do they need to do to get there?
Well, I will first say I am extremely jealous of the Trey Turner signing. And I hope it doesn't come to bite the Mets in the butt one way or another. However, having said that, I still think the Mets are better than they were in 2022. And I think that I kind of like that everybody's underestimating them again, which they were doing in 2022, because I think they are definitely a better team than they were in 2022. I think in 2023, they are definitely a better team than they were. And so I feel as if the underestimation is definitely because of the Edwin Diaz stuff mostly, and the Phillies winning the National League pennant. I don't take away from what John just said about the Phillies. I think that whole jelly sandwich was such a good analysis, and they definitely are better and getting there. I think that the Mets starting pitching is better than it was last year, and I don't think it's an understatement. I think that people are forgetting some of the elements that failed the Mets at the end there, other than the offense, which I think is a concern, but hopefully that they have that experience down the stretch, and hopefully they have Marte down the stretch, which they didn't have last year. But, like, thinking about how many games Bassett lost them, and I think, you know, everything that John's kind of mentioned regarding maybe there was fatigue, even though he was injured in the middle of the year, maybe there was some fatigue for Max at the end there and still be more able from the experience of being an older pitcher now, trying to figure out exactly what he needs to get him to the next level to finish this season. I still think, regardless of the Scherzer element and the Verlander element, that this five-man rotation is better suited down the stretch. Do I think the Mets will win the division? I do think the Mets will win the division, and I'm about changing the narrative right now. The Mets, this is what I've been about since the end of last year, before the wild card game, and the Mets did not heed my words. But until the Mets change the narrative, and really at this point, it's all about winning the World Series. It's the only way that narrative can be changed, because the narrative is the Mets will eventually blow it one way or another. So it starts with the division. Because the way that they and now I'm just hearing myself be repetitive. I hear these same audio clips from all off season and at the end before the wild card game last year. Change the narrative. Just do me a favor and change the narrative one way or another. That's all I want. So I can stop defending you so wholeheartedly every year. And that's my answer, Rich. They're going to win the division, and they're going to win the
All right.
game.
Good for you. I like the optimism. I think they'll definitely be in the playoffs. I give them a 50-50 shot at the division. I think it's likely that one team, the Braves or the Phillies, will regress this year, one or the other. And so I think the Mets will easily make the playoffs, maybe as division winner. I don't think this roster right now can go all the way. I think there's a lot of time to add to it. Again, I've said a couple times this podcast, they won last time. I think the place I'd love to see I don't know, closers don't grow on trees, but I'd love to see one more back-end reliever at minimum, and then I'll change my tune. But playoff team, I'd like to see them add a bit before I'll say that I think they're a World Series winner. Okay. You've been listening to the Metsian podcast, and we're going to wrap it up here. There's one more question I want to ask, and it's off-the-field stuff, if I may, and then we'll do the last words. That sound fair? All right. So, John, I'll start with you because, again, I know we're going to lose you soon. Off-the-field question. The Mets are raising parking to $40 this year from $27, $13 jump. Fans are all over that. Nobody's happy. The other thing that also came out is that the Coens would like to maybe build a casino and other multi-use entertainment facilities in the Citi Field parking lot. So you're raising the price parking, and if their plans are approved, which, again, the Wilpons were not approved when they tried to do it, so who knows, and who knows what other plans they have, maybe making other parking. But think about taking away parking spots, raising the price of parking, and maybe a casino on the grounds of Citi Field where the parking lot is. That's a lot to digest. John, any thoughts on that?
Well, I don't drive, so I may be the wrong person to ask about this. If you look at parking all across the country for sporting events, it has gone way, way, way too high. Too damn high, as the guy that ran for mayor a few years ago would say. The parking is too damn high. So I agree. It's ridiculous. I think there's enough space to build extra parking if you're going to build a casino. I don't think it's necessarily going to take away too many spots. But, again, I'm not the architect. I'm not the real estate developer. The Wilpons were the real estate developers. And I am confident that they got a lot of stuff done when they owned the Mets around that area. Oh, wait, they didn't. Because everything they touch turns to garbage, trash, as the kids said. So, listen, Steve's spending a lot of money on the team. He's got to make it back somehow. This is unfortunately the way it is. And, again, I don't drive, so I can honestly walk to Citi Field from where I am in under an hour. So my plan is to just do that. But, yeah, parking is ridiculous in this entire country, not just New York. We went to a Red Sox game. We went to Boston in the summer of last year, and we saw parking lots that were selling spaces for $100. So when you think about it that way, 40 is not so bad. But it's all relative, right? It's still too damn high. Too damn high.
Agreed. Sam, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that, you know, you're talking to somebody that ironically drove for a living for 3 years and now doesn't care when it comes to driving out you know, even then I was choosing to drive. And this is not something that people get a choice of, generally speaking. But again, I think I would rather take the broader approach that John took and looking at it just across the entire country. I understand where he's coming from in terms of like, hey, you're spending all this money on the team. You spent all this money on the team. You're going to have to make it back somehow. Yeah, that is the case. You know, we're now entering the 3 to 5 years. And so this goes hand in hand with everything that we were just talking about as to how far the team goes. Now it becomes how is the fan base going to judge you within the 3 to 5 year window that you gave yourself. So now the clock begins. And I guess you having to drive there, Rich, I will ask you, what is your opinion?
Yankee Stadium parking is around $40. I don't drive there very often, but that is my understanding. So on the one hand, I suppose you can't be surprised. On the other, it's quite an increase in pricing. And if the thing is this, too. The area around Citi Field, as we know, is garbage, right? It's awful. You don't want to be there. Nothing you can do around there. You know, John, you were in Boston recently. You just said the area around Fenway, restaurants and bars, Wrigley, same thing. You know, San Diego, same thing. Pittsburgh, same thing. So if they do put some restaurants and maybe some family-oriented stuff in addition to a casino and make it more of a destination, I think that's a good thing. I'm sure they would address the parking in another way, like have parking somewhere else, you know, that's adjacent to Citi Field, and then address the traffic pattern. I'm sure it's not just, oh, we're going from, you know, 10,000 spots to 5,000, screw you all, blah, 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 bye-bye. You know, I'm sure they're going to do something in the area to make up for it. You heard Buck Showalter say it last year, how bad traffic is getting out of the stadium. Can you imagine non-game traffic, people going to the casino and the restaurants and stuff? It has to be part of a bigger plan. I think that's the way the Cohens do business. I'm sure they have a bigger plan. We'll just have to see what happens. So, gentlemen, we have reached the top of the hour. I think we're going to wrap it up here. It's been a great hour talking baseball with you. Again, thank you to Mr. Metrodamus himself, John Coppinger. Sam, thank you as always. We will do our last word. I did want to give a shout-out to Adam Spiegel, who does our entry music that you heard at the beginning of the podcast. Thank you as always, Adam. And so, John, thank you for staying with us the entire time. And what would be your last word for tonight?
My last words are thank you for having me, as always. And this is perfect timing because I think the bus is one stop away. And my final word is two of them. Two words. Stay healthy. That's for the team, and that's for all of you out there. And that's for you, Rich, and that's for you, Sam. Stay healthy.
I love it. That is the key to this team, especially in the team. Sam, what's your last word tonight, sir?
Bring it on. You know, just I have no choice today at the bar when it comes to what I was putting on. And the Final Four is on its way. March Madness is almost over. Here comes another no choice that I will have. There will be no choice but to put baseball on. Bring it on.
Love it. Bring it on. We're ready. No more. Like the title of our podcast said, the dress rehearsal is over. It's time for the real thing. It kicks off Thursday afternoon at 4. Guys, enjoy it. Thank you to all of our listeners. This is why we do it. We love the interaction, whether it's on the site, whether it's people calling in, whether it's comments on Twitter. Thank you to all of you. Thank you, John. Thank you, Sam. Sam, give me your famous phrase as we take this out.
Baseball has returned. It's better than ever. Let's go Mets. Let's go, Mets. Everybody, let's go.
Let's go, Mets.
Thank you, John.
Have a great
night. Thank you, Rich. Thank you,
Thanks,
listeners.
Everybody. Have a great night.
Thank you, guys.
Bye now.